This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
You're listening to C-Suite Success Radio with your host and executive coach, Sharon Smith. If corporate success is your goal, C-Suite Success Radio offers you informative interviews with experts that will help you shorten your learning curve and accelerate your momentum to higher achievement. C-Suite Success Radio makes it simple and easy for you to tap into the wisdom of other successful business people who know the path you're traveling. If you're ready for success in corporate America, welcome to your new home at C-Suite Success Radio. And now, time for your host and C-Suite Executive Coach, Sharon Smith.
Welcome to this week's episode of C-Suite Success Radio. I am your host, Sharon Smith of C-Suite Results. Each week we focus on success, a word we all know and something we strive towards, but not a word that's easy to define. All of our topics and guests are aimed to help you achieve the goals you've set for your organization and for yourself as a leader. But more importantly, to help you accelerate the pace of your success. On today's show, we have Paul Mangiamelli, Chairman and CEO of Legendary Restaurant Brands. Paul took the helm at Bennigan's in 2011 and now has more than 150 restaurants open or under contract worldwide. Bennigan's has experienced strong growth while simultaneously redefining casual dining. In February of 2015, Paul turned his passion into ownership when he and his wife, Gwen, purchased the company, Legendary Brands Restaurant. In February 2015, Paul turned his passion into ownership when he and his wife, Gwen, purchased the company. Let's listen to the conversation I had with Paul and learn how he defines success and the lessons he has learned to help you gain the edge you are looking for. And today I want to welcome Paul to our call. Thank you for calling in today. I am so looking forward to having this conversation. Welcome, Paul.
It is my pleasure indeed. Thank you for having me.
I love talking with you because there's always so much energy, so much fun and love, which we're going to talk about. And before we talk about all of that, I want you to share more with our listeners today about who you are, the work you do, what gets Paul up in the morning and excited for the day.
Well, I have the unique honor and privilege to be leading the brands, the restaurant brands that actually created casual dining 41 and 51 years ago, and those are Bennigan's and Steak & Ale, respectively. The passion, the love, the fun, the energy that goes into running these brands is what alerts me to a 25-8 day and week, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's always a lot of fun when you love what you do, and it's always a lot of fun when you got a team that shares the same passion and work ethic that you do. I'm the lucky guy.
And it sounds like the people who work with you are pretty lucky to have you as a leader with that kind of energy. I want to hear more about this 25-8 philosophy that you've talked about.
The secret of this is a work ethic. The secret of this is a culture that's been perpetuated for the 40 and 50 years. And then tapping into the emotional connection that most people have with any brand, but we're lucky to enjoy with our brands, the connection that the brand was able to create years and years ago through the people, through the bartenders, through the servers, through the general managers, and through the ownership at that time. I had the pleasure to know Norm Brinker, who is an icon of icons within food service. He went on to become the CEO and then gradually bought out the founders of the Chili's chain, and then went on to, you know, get Maggiano's and Macaroni Grill and On the Border, Chili's, and do a lot around the world. And he was just such a great guy. And I had the pleasure of knowing him. I never worked for him, but knowing him. And I can attest to his generosity of spirit, generosity of intellectual capital. And this is, to me, who never even worked for him. He's just a cool guy. And so the only two brands that he ever created were Bennigan's and Steak & Ale. For me to be the custodian and have basically writing the second chapter of these great brands is, again, as I said in the onset, an honor and a privilege.
So tell us, though, 25-8, because most people know 24-7. I'm curious, and I'm sure our listeners are curious, how do you squeeze another day into the week and another hour into the – or no, another hour into the day and another day into the week?
Easy for you to say. Okay, well
– it wasn't.
You see, it's so complicated, you can't even explain it. It's a mentality. It's mathematically impossible, of course.
Right.
But it's a mentality because today, it's just not enough to work 24/7 because the nature of our brands, the nature of our industry, the nature of casual dining and the category itself is under assault. And it's under assault by the fact that there's been proliferation of the brand, casual dining brands throughout the years. There's proliferation of restaurants and the number of restaurants from a saturation standpoint. There's over 1 million restaurants in the United States today. It's close to, I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $700-800 billion as an industry. And today, what's unique is you don't even have to go to a restaurant to eat anymore. Now there's food trucks or pop-ups or kiosks or, you know, go to Nordstrom and they have a restaurant. You go to Brooks Brothers and they have a restaurant or a cafe. And it's amazing how many retailers that are outside the food service space are now serving food. And so the occasion has become under assault. And for us to differentiate ourselves, we have to have a clear vision, a clear focus, an executable plan that drives more capture of our customers that we call guests because of the relationship that we have with the patrons that come to our restaurants, and really deliver on a superlative that we term legendary, hence the name of our company, experience. To execute that is really, really hard. And so 25-8 is that work ethic that goes into leading green for Bennigan's. And of course, we have leading the red and white, which is steak and ale. And then, you know, doing the right thing for our guests that work hard for the money. And we have to pay them the proper respect from the food quality and the service and the ambiance and even the details, such as even the music that's being played. I think it's that level of attention and focus and drive that will win us enough market share for my franchisees to get a good return on their investment. And of course, my teams to have the satisfaction of a rewarding career and progression within that career. And of course, the guests win because we're giving them something of a special experience that, for some reason that I can't really explain, at least not in the time that we have allotted, on why service has become an anomaly in full service, where people are defecting to a tablet on a table. And when you're in full service, where you're doing a full menu and a full bar, to have your guests order for themselves flies in the strategy of delivering a service environment, a service mentality, and a delivery of an extraordinary experience. There are so many tangents that can come off that that I could speak probably extemporaneously now for the next 3 hours, but it's just an interesting dynamic now. So for us to be able to differentiate ourselves, we must have the love and the passion for the brand, but also demonstrate that through a work ethic where we have to keep our menu fresh, we have to keep our beverage line fresh, we have to constantly look on menu creation, menu ideation, and also solicit from our guests, what do you want? So we can deliver to them what they're looking for an experience in either a Bennigan's or a Steak and Ale.
And people listening who may be in a different industry can take that and extrapolate it into the work they do, and how can they serve their clients and their customers and be innovative and constantly provide the service that their customers and clients deserve.
That's exactly right. I mean, I really look at the industry, the food service industry, being we're a retailer. Our widget is food and beverage. It's not shoes or dresses or any other kind of retail. And it's all about merchandising, and it's all about the presentation, and it's all about this wonderful thing called value for the experience. I mean, can you give them a price-value relationship? And so we take extra pains to make sure that the food that we deliver, 99% of it is made from scratch. Now, you know, we make a lot of our menu items in-house. Our beverage, we have constant beverage ideation so that we're delivering a flavor-forward type of profile in our drinks. Because, you know, the mixed drinks are back. Spirits are back.
Yep.
The classic martini and Manhattan are back. And I think not only is it not enough to present it, but you got to present it in glassware that's kind of cool, or a garnish that's kind of cool, or food where the portions are ample so that you can get a value delivered by the guests. And a lot of it is subliminal. They don't even know why. They just dig your brand, whether it be a Bennigan's or Steak and Ale, but they just know that they were overcome with service and friendliness and respect. And I think that's the traits that made dining out so successful back in the 50s and 60s, and something that I want to reattach to the brands that I'm honored to represent.
So it must be challenging, I'm thinking, because so many, I'm not sure if all of your establishments are franchisees or some of them, but in you have to get this passion and this ethic to be bought into, right, by lots of people who you don't have touch with every day. So you have to create a culture and ensure that the culture can be maintained regardless of you being there or being able to check in on them and the fact that they don't technically, quote unquote, work for you. How do you do that?
Well, the first thing I did was gain, by the purchase, 100% control of our company and of our brands and of our direction. And that by itself gives me enormous credibility within the franchise community, because there's a lot of CEOs out there, and not to denigrate anybody or any brand, but there's a lot of CEOs that don't have $1 of his own invested in a brand, or $1 of his own invested in one of the restaurants. And for, again, for the general listening audience, I mean, or for that matter, any of the, you know, retailers, you know, brands that that they represent. And if you don't have your own skin in the game, how do you expect other people, whether it's from a guest standpoint, to purchase into your brand, or from a franchisee standpoint, to invest in your brand, if you don't have your own skin in the game? So I wanted to demonstrate first and foremost that not only do I believe in my brands, but I put my money where my passion is, and I have complete control of the direction of these brands. It's been an invaluable tool, and to the point where most of my other existing franchisees have now grown to their second, third, or fourth restaurant because they know that I'm here to stay. I'm not doing this as a CEO or chairman and looking for my next job. They know I'm here to stay, that this is about focus, and it's about dedication. It's about a commitment that we're driving to the next level of food service. And I think the paradigm within food service has changed dramatically. And this gives me the ability, from a control standpoint, to really be able to be agile and to adapt, improvise, and overcome all the obstacles, because we have complete control. We don't have to go to a board or go through a bureaucracy. My board is my guest. My board is my team of franchisees that give me their input, because they've invested their hard-earned money in our brand. And I think that is where the inclusion and the collaborative spirit comes into play, where together we become a very powerful force as a brand. And the competition is all around us, so that when you can band in that diverse and deep intellectual capital to put against your brand, it becomes a reckoning force. That's first and foremost was the complete control. And the rest is the, you know, communication piece, the involvement piece, the constant utilization of your supplier partners, that being who are part of your supply chain, whether it be on the meat side, the protein side, or any other aspect of our supply chain, from the beverage side, where they give you the ideation, or test kitchens or chefs that they have full time. And you open the funnel very wide to get these ideas, because today, with the technology that's available to us, the world is moving very quickly. Before, it used to be, back when I started, concept could stay the same in look and feel and menu for 5-10 years. Well, now it's about 5 or 10 minutes, because the dynamic nature of our business and the competitive nature of our business makes it mandatory that you pay attention. That in part answers part of your question in terms of, you know, how do we do it? Because that focus part and that control part is very key.
You've had a long career, it looks like, in the restaurant business, from looking at, you know, your bio and some other information. It sounds like you have a lot of passion still to this day. What is it about this industry specifically that you are really excited about and really gives you that level of fun and love?
I have to go all the way back to the beginning. My uncle owned a trattoria Italian restaurant in Little Italy, New York. And as a kid, there was about a bunch of 9 of us cousins that ran around his restaurant. He was very smart, by the way, because we worked like dogs for hours upon hours upon hours to get 50 cents at the end of the night, or a 50 cent piece, if anybody can remember that. And we thought we were rich. And we would do things like clear the tables, clean and scrub all the pots and the pans. We would make some of the appetizers and really just help out. And what a great orientation that is, to work with people that are on what I call my internal guests and my external guests. The internal are the employees. And there has to be that servant leadership there as well. And I learned it from the ground up. And then dealing, of course, with your other guests, where, again, it's a new set of faces, a new set of personalities every single night. And so it really built in a very strong work ethic. It built in an awareness of how dynamic the industry was. And the industry, when you take a look at it, I think the statistic is one in every seven people in the United States worked in a restaurant at some point in their lives. I think that's an amazing statistic, especially when you take a look at, you know, what our contribution as an industry is to our GDP, and that it's made up mostly of small business owners. I mean, when you look at McDonald's as an example, it's not General Motors. It's 90% of it is franchise. So there's small business owners that are operating in our great country and are responsible for providing an apprenticeship, if you will. It was almost like a guild of old where you can learn a trade and a craft. And I think that trade, in our case, is service, whether it's a bartender or whether it's a server or whether it's a host in the front of the house or whether it's you're on the cook line and learning pantry or learning how to work the grill or the fryer or the charbroiler. It's an amazing learning experience, and I think it prepares you so well for wherever you go in your life. And I think the statistic of, you know, one in seven people in the United States working in a restaurant makes it mandatory, and I must get on my soapbox for just a minute, to really take a hard look at the minimum wage discussion that's going on right now. No one in casual dining wants to pay a 16-year-old, 17, 18-year-old kid out of high school or going to college $15 an hour to bus there. And so that age group, that younger age group, is going to be left out. That unemployment section is going to be very high. The apprenticeship piece is going to go away. And then you jump to tip credit, where there's a lower amount that's paid against the minimum wage, whatever that is from a state standpoint. And it's made up by tips. Now, the average server, regardless of category, as long as it's a service type of environment, makes about $30 an hour. So the tip credit piece that's being eliminated in state to state is ridiculous to pay the server $15 an hour, which has just been voted on in a couple of different states, and they make tips on top of that. That throws off the complete model, whether it's a franchise model or just a business model for a restaurant, so that the owner, that where we work on usually a 5% margin, so a nickel out of every dollar, that has completely gone away when you go from $7.25 from a federal mandated minimum wage to a $15 minimum wage. It just doesn't make sense. And everybody that has rushed to increase these rates to $15, $12 or whatever, wherever, have already seen a multitude of restaurants and retailers close as a result. So we're not giving them more jobs. We're giving them less jobs. And in some cases, we're closing the operation entirely. So I don't see how that benefits anybody that wants to make a more comfortable wage. All I would ask for is an open discourse with people that actually work in a retail environment, with the people that work within that environment, with the state legislatures or Congress, or even the presidency, where they can see that if we want to perpetuate the success and get people working again and make America great again, it's really to pay attention to that small business owner that's responsible for, you know, 60%+ of the GDP.
Sounds like there could be a political goal in your future. You're very good at what you're saying, and it makes a lot of sense. And I'm not sure if you've ever thought about running for any type of local office or getting involved in politics?
Well, you know what I think about? I think about, can't help but look at myself when I was just a kid and starting out, that if somebody didn't give me that job to be the busboy or the bartender or the cafe manager or the general manager of a restaurant, I would never have learned so much about this phenomenal industry that gives so much. I mean, it really is an art. When you go to Europe, and some other countries within South America or Central America or Mexico, it's a profession.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's not working your way through college. It's a profession.
Absolutely.
And they're experts at it.
Yep.
And that's why I harken back to what I said earlier. Whatever happened to service? Today, again, if you get it, it's an anomaly. You're shocked.
I know.
And that shouldn't be the way. So it's not a political future that I'm looking for. I'm looking for being able to provide opportunities for the youth of today, this generation, whether it be the, you know, the millennials that everybody likes to talk about, or even the generation that's coming after them now, and giving them an idea of how to actually work, how to learn, and how to be productive in a retail environment, because it's a wonderful learning experience.
And you're also teaching face-to-face conversations, because so many young people today are so involved in just texting and Facebook and social media and Instagram that they're not. And the fear for a lot of older folk is that how are we going to have conversations 20 years from now if no one knows how to have a conversation?
That is so right. That is so right. You got to look up. You got to look people in the eye. You got to learn how to speak and be articulate. And again, this industry, it's not the end-all be-all, but I think it's been very good to me, been very good to my team. We in casual dining, we provide a respite from all of us that are working really hard, you know, already working 25/8. And every once in a while, you don't want to wait in line and order twice. Like, I can't believe even a Starbucks that has grown geometrically, you know, they have all these points of distribution. And if I told you years ago that you're going to wait twice for a cup of coffee,
right,
you know,
and pay
$4,
yeah,
for it, you tell me I'm nuts. And here they are now that, you know, they're a tremendously successful company. Mm-hmm. And now they're getting into, again, another example, they're getting into food. Mm-hmm. It's not just coffee or tea. Now it's, you know, bar, it's alcoholic beverages, and it's getting into food. And not just a breakfast sandwich or a croissant, but they're getting into all three day parts, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So it's an amazing thing. And that person that's eating that lunch is taking away from those of us that are in casual dining that have spent millions of dollars to open up a freestanding unit, you know, off the highway, because they're eating lunch now in Starbucks, or they're going to a Chipotle in a very sterile environment, going through the line. And the only service you receive, if you can call a service, is you finally get your burrito if you wait in line for 20 minutes. And today, the price, because of the wage pressure, by the way, and other mandates that we're subjected to, it's as much, there's parity now with you being able to get a soft drink, a hamburger, and French fries, and leave a tip in my restaurant, and it would be kind of the same price that if you go to Chipotle and you get a burrito and guacamole and a beer. Mm-hmm. So I think it's amazing. So wouldn't you want somebody to wait on you? That time where you can just sit down and you just get bowled over by people that actually care about that experience and look you in the eye, and you take your order, and you get a phenomenal, what we call legendary experience out of it. That's my position on it.
No, it's great.
For hours.
No, I get it. I was one of those 1 in 7 who's worked in the food industry and waitress most of my way through college. First job, not my very first job. I definitely worked counter at a bakery. I bused tables once. I definitely worked lots of restaurants as a waitress, to include the fry line. So I know what it's like to clean a fryer out. That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And worked the dish room a bit. And yeah, it was a great job. I mean, I really enjoyed the work, and all the restaurants I worked at, they were all very different. And I think it does build character and does teach you something about how to treat others and service. And I'm a very picky customer now because I've worked in that environment, and I know what good service should be, and I know what good management looks like. And I don't know if you'll find this funny or not. When I was waiting tables, I never worked in a restaurant that would put the restaurant on a hold, you know, put a hold at the front door when there were empty tables. You just got double and triple sat, and you had to deal with it. And I walk into restaurants now, and there's empty tables, and like, it'll be a 10-minute wait, and I don't understand.
Right. I think that just flies not only in the face of common sense, but from a service orientation. And it's not like it only happens once. It happens all the time, so you got to prepare for it. Can't stand that either. And again, that's why service has become an anomaly, because here you go. First of all, to get you to come through the door in the first place is monumental, because if you're giving your market share to that brand, whatever that is, somebody's losing market share. And then they tell you there's tables open, and they say, well, you know what, it's going to be a 15-minute wait. Or, you know what, here, take this, whatever the device is,
right,
that lets you know. Yeah. And then they go over to the bar, and then we'll come get you. And you already see that there's empty tables. So again, mm-hmm, you feel violated right from the get-go, and it's already ruined your experience. And you just walked in the door.
I know, and it's incredible how often that's happening. This is fascinating. I know you could talk about this forever, and I'm enjoying it immensely. I do want to ask you, because we only have a little bit more time together, I do want to ask you what I always ask everyone on the call, since the name of the show is C-Suite Success Radio. I always ask my guests to give me their own personal definition of success.
Success is not an accident. It's all about all the things we just talked about. It's about hard work, and there is no substitute for it. It's about hard work, and it is about 25/8, and it is about perseverance, because there are setbacks. There's always a setback, and I was lucky enough to go to the Naval Academy, the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, and you learn to, you know, improvise, adapt, and always overcome, no matter what the obstacle is. And I carried that into my business life. So the perseverance encapsulates a couple of things, like, you know, learning, studying, sacrifice. But most of all, it comes to what we talked about right at the outset. Love. Do you love what you do? Because when you love what you do, you don't mind putting in the 25/8. Because every day you're getting closer to an objective that you set with your team or for a personal goal. You never stop learning. I mean, I'm learning things all the time. I mean, a great case in point is, I'm right here in Lexington, Kentucky, where we just opened up a brand new Bennigan's. while other people are going bankrupt, while other people are closing, while other people are trying to figure out who their next CEO is, I'm opening up my beautiful Bennigan's restaurants. I'm working on bringing back Steak and Ale brand. I got Bennigan's on the fly. And I just talked to a brand new group, fresh. You know how it was when you first started your server position. You get everybody in an all-store meeting, front of the house, back of the house, everybody. And you talk about, you know, what do we stand for? It's more than a bottom line. It's more than trying to just get a sales number. It's about standing for something bigger than the P&L. It's more than a profit line. It's about standing for something that means something to our guests, and that's where we tap into that emotional connection. And that they got to know that every single thing they do is going to contribute or not to that legendary experience that builds that emotional connection. So I tie it all together. It's not like it's the strategy du jour or, you know, the new mission and purpose that changes every 2 weeks. It's something that we absolutely stand for. And it's part and parcel of an industry that has been around for, you know, thousands of years, actually. And it's one that I think we all in this industry should pay attention to, close attention to, especially if you're in the full serve category with regard to the level of service and experience that we give our guests.
I love everything you said. One of it all stood out to me. But when you started talking about what do we stand for more than a bottom line, the front of the house, back of the house coming together and having that conversation so that everybody knows, made me think of something I've been talking about with folks lately, which is employees, and it doesn't really matter to me if it's food service or retail or corporate or what it is, they have to be bought into the big picture and the big mission or they're just going to go somewhere else. Most people, especially, I mean, or even more importantly, to include the millennials, they want to be part of something bigger than themselves. They're looking for purpose. And when they go to work every day just to do a job and someone else comes along and offers them a purpose or another job, it's very easy for them to move on. And it's very easy for them to, and not just them, the millennials, I don't want anyone to get me wrong, them, employees, that if you don't understand the big picture and what you're working towards and how your role helps the organization get to that big picture and what they stand for, it's very easy for people to get disenfranchised and disengaged and not provide that level of service. So I love that you brought up in the definition of success and what you're talking about, how it has to be more than the bottom line and it has to be a conversation about what we stand for.
Absolutely. And you know, passion and culture eats strategy for lunch. And when you have that as what you stand for, as you have that as a guiding principle, if that's your true north, I tell even my franchisees, I say, look, we'll make more money collectively than if you have just focused on your bottom line, because there is no strategy where you save your way to profitability. You know, there's so many people that you see this all around too, where, you know, let's cut back on the portion here, or let's make that. We have an 8-ounce burger. It's a half-pound burger. It's a special grind just for Bennigan's. It's the best in casual dining. And so many people say, well, you know, what's the magic in 8? Why can't it be 7? And you can say, oh, my goodness. It's like you want to ruin the bond and the integrity that you have with your guests by giving them something substandard. We just can't stand for that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when we have a mission and a purpose statement, and everybody that's working for us anywhere, regardless of position, has to know it. And I said, look, you don't have to learn it, but then you don't have to be here either. You can go work someplace else. And it becomes what we're using as our true north, because it is about paying respect to the guests. And as I said before, by paying that respect, by doing all the things that we had already talked about, the franchisees, the restaurant itself, the brands themselves will generate more money than if you had just focused on that. And every single time I've been in this kind of a situation, it has been proven out. So I know we're on to something really big here, and I really appreciate you giving me a chance to articulate it. Thank you.
Oh, it's exciting. I love hearing anyone who's passionate about what they're doing and has something to share. We can all learn. I learn from these conversations. Today, I'm recording 4 episodes, and every conversation I've had has set the biggest smile on my face because someone will say something. I'm like, ugh. There's another nugget. And as my listeners aren't listening to them all at the same time like I am, every week, I hope people are listening and tuning in for new information. And as I said at the onset, grab one piece of information, one nugget they can take away. And if they're in a different industry, it doesn't matter. There's still lots of amazing things that you're saying that cross industry. It's about service. It's about integrity. It's about never stop learning, loving what you do. The 25-8, all of that is industry agnostic. It's specific to success and culture. And I like that you said passion and culture, eat strategy for lunch, since strategy isn't my strong suit, even though I do know I need to focus on it better.
Yep.
But I do like that. And it was kind of funny that you used a food analogy as well. And you've given us so much to think about and so many great nuggets and tidbits today. What would you say is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
So I was lucky enough to know a man that was just like the grandfather I never had. And his name was Customato. He was a very famous boxing manager, Mike Tyson, Floyd Patterson, Jose Torres. I was lucky enough to get into boxing in New York when I wasn't bussing tables for my uncle. And he took me under his wing, and he taught me that beautiful, sweet science. And I was lucky enough to get into the boxing trials in 1972 for the Olympics. But one of the things he said, which I carried into work, in fact, I think about him every day, and he said that here's the definition of discipline. Whatever you want to do, make yourself not do. Don't let yourself do it. And whenever you don't want to do, make yourself do it. So you don't want to get up at 5 and do the road work and make weight? Too bad, fella. Get up, go to work, and get on the road and start running. You want to eat that piece of pie, but you got to make your weight? Can't eat it. You got to push away from it. You don't want to, work 25-8? You make yourself work 25-8. So the definition of discipline from Customato is something I walk around with every single day. I share it with as many people as I can. I want to share it with your listeners. And by the way, this is really going to be such a I feel like a little patronizing to myself. But I did write a book about Bennigan's Return to Relevance. It's on my website, Bennigan's.com. I'm not trying to sell the book, but if anybody found anything of wisdom in there, I got all these stories of what we've done in order to turn this brand around from bankruptcy, Chapter 7 bankruptcy. You can go to our website and take a look at it if you want it for yourself. But that discipline is something that you just gotta do 25-8, because the first time you don't, your competitor will start winning, and you can't let that happen.
No, it sounds like a great book, and especially from what you're talking about, turning a company around from chapter 7 into the growth that you've had. You've had amazing growth over since you've taken over the organization. I mean, that's for anybody to read, regardless of industry, and it's one that I'll definitely want to check out. Outside of your book, what is your favorite book when it comes to leadership or personal development?
I've read a million of them, but the last book I read was the Steve Jobs book. I just thought it was a brilliant articulation of how Steve Jobs went from, basically a kid and surrounded himself with a lot of talented people to grow to one of the largest market cap companies in the world today, Apple. And I remember there were three things that one of his business advisors, because, you always need a coach. And he was smart enough to know he needed a coach. So early on, when he came back to Apple, and he had a business coach, and he said three things, and I'm kind of paraphrasing and using my own terminology, but the three things that you needed for your business, and that was focus, empathy, if you can believe that, and perception.
From what I know about Steve Jobs, that's surprising.
Yeah, and so you wouldn't think Steve Jobs as empathetic, but empathy is also understanding what other people want.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted a Walkman that they can put into a little box that held 5,000 songs.
Yeah.
And then, God, if he was alive today, what he would have, what other new products we would have had, the iCars and the ITVs and the iSpacecraft and who the hell knows what else. But it was just brilliant. And the perception is even today, I mean, the reputation of anything new coming out of Apple, whether it's the i7 or i17 or the i92, people are standing in line trying to buy it. They're going to be the first ones to have it because you created that perception of craveability.
Yeah,
you got to have it. You just got to have it. Regardless of what anybody else is doing, you just got to have it because it's the new Apple product. And so, and then his focus was, you know, he didn't try to do everything at the same time. He focused on one product at a time. He might have been working on a lot of iterations of it, but his focus was keen. And I think anybody in any industry, in any business, in any position, can use those three words to apply to their own career goals or their own business goals, and you know, make that something tangible that would assist them greatly.
Wow, this has been really fantastic, Paul. Thank you so much for joining us and for all that you have shared. I love it. This has been a really wonderful conversation, and I appreciate your time, especially with traveling. You're in Kentucky opening a new restaurant, and you took the time out to talk with us today. So thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. I'll never miss a chance to evangelize. And I did feel like an evangelist today, but to share the power of the brands and share whatever knowledge, because it's all about all of us trying to help one another, and then we all become better as a result. So thank you for the opportunity to do that. It's so appreciated.
Absolutely. And the thing about evangelizing means that you're passionate about something, and you did it in a way that was authentic and empathetic and sharing from your heart. So there's nothing wrong with that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You made me feel so good. I'm going to go get a world-famous Monte Cristo now.
That sounds fantastic.
Well, I'll take a bite for you.
And get a martini with it.
Okay, I think it's sold.
Have a good day, Paul. Thank you.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening today. Tune in for our next episode. And in the meantime, you can get more resources at www.c-suiteresults.com. Make it a successful day.
Like what you just heard, visit c-suiteradio.com. C-Suite Radio, turning the volume up on business. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.